morning's Old Testament reading from Psalm 97, verses 10 through 12. O you who love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the lives of his saints. He delivers them from the hand of the wicked. Light is sown for the righteous, and joy for the upright heart. Rejoice in the Lord, O you righteous, and give thanks to his holy name.
The New Testament scripture reading comes from Romans 12, 1 through 21, and this is also our text this morning. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body there are many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. The one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing mercy, showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink, for by doing so you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
That little message to the kids is not too off of what I'm going to talk about this morning. The church, it's a crazy place. The church is a crazy place. Because we don't look quite like the New Testament church. We don't look like churches in Africa and Asia and China. Right now in China, there are places that we would have taken all day the previous day just to find, so we would be with church people on a Sunday morning, because they'd be hidden. We're not quite like, but we are God's church. No matter what we look like, we are God's church. I don't know if you have this problem, but when you're sharing the Lord with people, or you're just in a group of people, and you bring out your Christianity a little bit, all of a sudden there's a little pushback, because a lot of people today can't fathom that there's a God. that God would have a son that was both man and God, and that he would die on a cross for sins that most people don't even think they need someone dying for. And so belief in Christianity, belief in God, sometimes is what we call improbable. That means it's hard to convince others. Now, I'm going to be preaching in the park pretty soon. And Maxine has heard this for 4 years. I will be glad that I don't have to defend God's existence in the park. They all believe God exists. Some of them running, some of them hiding, some of them not ready yet, but I don't have to convince them. But in the world, it's really hard to convince people that God exists. If that is true, it's got to be really hard to convince people that the church is who we say we are. Because we say we're the body of that Jesus they can't believe in. All right? So the church becomes almost as unbelievable as God himself. And sometimes it's even hard to convince Christians the church is that important. Right? And so I've actually been thinking about this lately. And you guys have kind of heard some sermons by the way, you know, preachers, if they're really good preachers, what they preach on is what they're struggling with, right? And it's not because it's personal struggle. They're trying to work through what they believe. And so we have the opportunity to do that publicly because we're doing that. Now, if you were listening to me, say, 30 years ago when I was first preaching, I'm not going to tell you that I haven't changed at all. I hopefully have grown. But I sure did think back then I knew it all. Now I don't think I know it all anymore, right? But you've heard me preaching and teaching on what the church is, the nature of the church, who we are. I think that would be the theme of 4 years of preaching. Can you believe it? As of April, mid-April, I have been preaching in this church, in this building, for 4 years. My goodness gracious. Where did the time go? Right? And then this last November, 135, you all, our neighbors and my family and friends all said, you get to stay. All right? And I was just so pleased with that. But I'm going to tell you right now, one of the things that I am struggling with is not the right word, because it's almost like I'm struggling in the sense of, yeah, I don't really know if I believe it. That's not struggle. I'm a struggle. Think of it as like exercise. You're trying to get better at something, and it's not quite working, so you try it again, try it again. If you think of all the sports people that have to catch that pass over and over again in tryout, in practice, so they'll do it like that on the field, right? And so that's what I mean by struggle. I don't mean struggle in the sense of I can't believe what I'm preaching. But the issue of who we are as God's people, I think, really, really matters. It matters. Because I believe it matters, because we are the body of Christ, and we are God's presence in the community. Now, I know that we can look around. Don't look too far, because you can look to yourself and go, God's presence, me, us. I sin, I fall, I stray, I am not perfect, I have problems, things come out of my mouth that ought not to come out of my mouth. How can I be? No, you are not God's presence. I have to be careful. God does live inside you, all right? Know that. If you're a Christian, God lives inside you. I am saying we together are God's presence in the hill, in the community. And I think that is so much so, it is so important, because I believe that as a church, we're going to make a difference in the hill. Not because of John, not because of Freedom, not because of Maxine. By the way, Max, everywhere I go, Maxine is, that woman is remarkable. I'm saying, which woman? I don't know her. No, I'm not kidding. She is going to be the secretary, officially, of the Hill North, right? Town management team. And when I talk to people about that, not to her, she's way too humble to actually talk about this, they say, I'm so glad she's doing that. Right? See, God is going to use us in our community. As individuals, yes, but because we're part of a church, God's going to use us. He's going to change people's lives. I know it. Might take 20 years. Might take 30. It might take the next generation. Why do we do this with the kids every Sunday? Why do I embrace the kids? Why does Rick embrace the kids just to make sure, right? You see them come up, right? Why do we tell the kids they're important? Because they are us 20 years from now, right? I am preaching for the long haul. I am caring about our church and this community for the long haul. But still, what? Who are we? Who is this church? And I think Romans chapter 12 is going to help us. All right. So we're going to do a few things this morning that will help us to understand Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, all the way through to 21. Some of it I'm going to go really fast, like really quickly over. Some I'll slow down and pause, okay? All right? But most people read these two verses, these first two verses, as if they're directed at you as an individual. All right? Present your bodies, each of us as individuals presenting our bodies. But I want to let you know, these verses are about the church, together. It's about all of us in this room, literally, but together, gathered together, presenting our bodies to God because of His mercy. All right? So what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about, don't change it quite yet. I want to talk about the setting behind why Paul wrote this letter, or at least the church. All right? Go ahead, John. This verse from Acts will tell us a little something. In Acts chapter 18, and it says he, that's Paul, found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. Now, what's in red there? Because Claudius, that's the emperor, had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. There was a point in time that everybody who was Jewish in the city of Rome had to leave Rome. You've heard on the news plenty about the exodus of people going out of Syria and places, the refugees and the refugee camps, right? Can you imagine all the Jews in the city of Rome being told they have to leave? Now, the emperor didn't make a distinction between Jewish Jews and Christian Jews. Everybody had to leave. So that meant all the Jewish Christians had to leave as well. That's why Paul meets this nice couple on his own travels, because they were told they had to leave, their Jewish couple. All right? So that's the background, okay? Now, I just want to give this a little bit of thought before the pictures that I have up there. If the church sort of smacked and smelled and looked a little Jewish before they were kicked out of Rome, right? And they left and only Gentiles were left, what do you think the church becomes like? It becomes like the Gentiles. So it tastes and smells and looks Gentile-ish, all right? There's nothing wrong with that, by the way, because what are we supposed to look like? We're supposed to look like the hill. That's what we're supposed to look like. It's okay for us to look like that, all right? But can you imagine what those Jews felt like coming back when they were allowed back to Rome? Everything they were used to, everything that they were in charge back then, all of a sudden they're not in charge anymore. And the churches, don't think building, think of people's homes, smacked of Gentile-ish. And you got to remember, Jews had problems still with Gentiles because they ate stuff they can't eat. And they did things that they weren't supposed to do, right? Okay? All right, John, go ahead. Now, I have, what I did is I created a little PowerPoint here just to kind of show you, all right? So we got Jews in Rome and Gentiles in Rome, all right? But the church, which is some Jews, a little bit of Gentiles, where it's mostly what? Jewish, right? Okay, hit the next one. But the Jews were told they had to be leave. So what did the church become like? Gentile, right? Okay? Go ahead. And then when the Jews were allowed to return to Rome, they were the minority, and it was mostly Gentile. Now, we all know what it's like to live in a majority population. All right? This is not about politics. I'm talking about church. All right? I don't care if you belong to a club that over time, all of a sudden, a certain group gets to rise up and they're in power, and all of a sudden, a lot of little people aren't in power anymore. We all know what it happens, even in your own families, when the matriarch or the patriarch passes away, and all of a sudden now there's a scramble, who's going to be in charge? Everybody knows these social dynamics. This is not just ethnic populations, color populations. It's not just that. But we know what it's like to live in a time where there's somebody in majority, and we now have to function in the minority. So I want you to think about church, though. I'm using what's happening in the world to help us understand church, okay? God does not want it that way. All right, go ahead, John. All right, so the first thing that this church, with it being mostly Gentile and a little Jewish, you got to remember, now it's really looking like the culture that they're from. You got temples, and you got Gentiles, and you got Roman culture. And it's all, I'm not saying part of the church, because it's still the church, but it has that flavor. Why do you think at the end of this service, we're singing Stomp by Kirk Franklin? It is not because I went to a suburban church and I'm bringing that music to here. Right? That's music that's more like here. Why do we sing certain songs and I hopefully my vocabulary is starting to change enough that I sound more like the hill? We do it because we're in the hill, right? Okay? So we understand what it's like to live in a culture where we do kind of look like it. Nothing wrong with that. That's not where the problem comes in. But now the Gentile Christians have a platform of majority culture leadership. And the Jews come back and they are thought of as less. Right? Not just less in number, but less as Christians. Right? Third one, Christian Jews return with marginal social or cultural status. We all been at places that if you're down here on the totem pole of society, you don't get to be in charge in anything, right? Doesn't matter what club or church or anything you belong to. It's just the nature of things. And so we do understand what it's like for Jews to have returned to where they once were in charge, but no longer, and they are actually more the marginal group. So what does Paul do? Because that shouldn't happen in the church. That's the point. See, I know you all pay attention to the news. I know that you know more about the news than you let on. You watch TV, you pay attention to the news, and you know there's so many problems out there. You have advocates for social justice. You have advocates for race relationships. You have all that stuff happening, right? You have heard from me very little on the political side from this, let's call this the pulpit. But I have said we are the solution. The church is the solution. And the reason why is because I think that's the way God is intended. He can put everything back together with his people. And so this becomes important. I think Romans chapter 12 helps us. Go ahead. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. There's a lot behind this, but just think for a second. This isn't about John. This is not about freedom. This is not about my mom. It's not about mama. It's about us together being somewhat different than our culture. Because we have gathered together to worship. We have gathered together to be God's people and to worship. And you can see it there. Present your bodies, which is an act of worship. Present who you are as an act of worship together. All right? All right, go ahead. Now, this next verse, do not be conformed to this age. I'm not sure why the translators say world there, but it actually means this age. You know, all the things that are wrong with the world, right? Okay? Most people take that as individually. Nisi, don't be conformed to the world. Lisa, don't be conformed to the world. Now, first off, I'm going to let you know, you as individuals ought not to be conformed to this world. But there's plenty of other verses to hit you personally. This is telling the church, don't do it like the world does it. Don't do church the way the world does it. Okay? Don't be like the temples. Don't be like the culture. Don't be... That doesn't mean we won't smell like the hill and be like the hill. Those things are fine. But the things that have upset the world, have made people have different levels, all those things have to disappear in the church. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Again, a translation problem. There's no "your" there. You all know that I don't pull out Greek too often. This is one of the times where I want to pull it out, okay? All right? Actually, it says, but be transformed by the renewal of mind. Just mind, all right? So think of it as this way. As church, we have to have a different kind of imagination. Don't close your eyes, but pretend I tell you to close your eyes. And just picture only one type of people in this church. One type. Everyone's like Nisi. I like Nisi, so I can handle that probably most days. Right? All right? But now imagine in the congregation people who you have problems with outside the congregation. Whether they have wealth or status or a better job or more education, or they just have something that makes them in society up. All of a sudden they're now part of here. See, our imagination is that can't be. We can't get along, right? It's easier to have imagination that it's all like Nisi. Especially if it's Nisi having the imagination. I'm not picking on you because you walked in. Okay. But think about it a second. As a church, we have to have God's imagination. Because He's going to do some things in our midst that is unlike the rest of the world. All right, so that's why we need to be transformed. That by testing, you may discern what the will of God is. I have heard so many poor sermons on this. This is not us trying to figure out what God's will is. It's about us demonstrating that we know God's will because we are God's will. We do it God's way. We are going to be a church. We're going to be a group of people that is so different than every other group of people. And we're going to demonstrate, and you've heard me say this before, anytime you get one of those lists, good and acceptable and perfect, you know, you don't stop and say, okay, what is good? What is acceptable? As if God has different levels. He's just saying, God's will in its fullness. You, and I'll just put my own words in, we are God's fullness right here, right? Christ's body. Go ahead, John. So that God's will be demonstrated. So how is this done? That's the big question. How in the world does CPC in the hill, let alone any church, do this? All right, here we go. First, by the body, the gathered church, working together by grace. No matter what we do, we always have to remember it's still God's grace. All right? See, Mama and I get along pretty well. All right? I will grant that we get along. I think we do. Right? But I don't always get along with Maxine. Confession time. No, we are imperfect people perfectly together. Alright? Okay? Alright? But you know what I'm saying? Alright? So whatever works out, how we ever work in our relationship, that's always gonna be God's grace, no matter what. Because there are certain people I'm just gonna get along with. I know I'm picking on Nisa. I think I would just get along with you if I just hung with you. I just think that we would get along. And we'd probably not have to work at it that hard. All right? That's how I feel about our personalities. All right? But I might have to work a little harder with John. And God's given me John, so it's been work. You know what I'm saying, right? Our personalities might not be that perfect fit in the world sense. But we also know God has put us together, so we work at our relationship. Okay? You ever get... young people who look at certain marriages go, oh, I don't want my marriage like that. And they go, like, oh, they look so beautiful together. Well, they have the personalities that just make it look so easy. I don't like them. All right? I want to see the ones that have to work at their relationship. Now, that isn't a confession that I really have to work at my relationship with Lisa. Please don't go there. But it is true. Isn't it true? There are just certain people that you have a harder time, not because you don't like them or anything. It's just the way you're put together. Okay? All right? So here we are. We need it by grace. By grace, by the grace given to me, by given to Paul, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. I think he could have just stopped right there. He doesn't have to say nothing else. If everybody in our church just stopped thinking highly of yourself and thought more of the other person. What did I tell our kids? What's the most important thing about family? The other person. I don't think Paul would have had to even go anywhere else, but he's molding a church, what I call forever. Not just for that day, but forever. We need to know all the moving parts. And here we go. Go ahead, John. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. Again, there's a lot more going on in this verse than I'm going to give today, but just get the sense. There's lots of individual members, one body. But if you take the first verse, don't think so highly of yourself, all of a sudden members are all what? They're all on the same plane. So if you can think of the early church, doctors and beggars, all of a sudden, beggars who become Christians, doctors who become Christians, right? The male who used to abuse women at the temple, and the temple prostitute who now comes to that fellowship, or where? Can you imagine how that would have changed the culture? Someone was just talking about the NFL just made the rule about no more kneeling. I don't know if you read that. To be honest with you, I understand. I get it. I call it the silly platform. I said, you know what would be a great protest? If every single one of those players said, I'm not playing until you stop the sex trafficking that goes along with every time we have a game. Would that be a protest? That would be a protest. All right? And I'm thinking that how the church changed the world is because that man who thought he could do anything to anybody because he was a Roman man, all of a sudden had to love and care for and think highly of even the temple prostitute, let alone his wife in his own house. See how that changes in the church? Because we're no longer individual members. We are a body together. Go ahead, John. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us. Now, I just want you to hear that again. First, Paul says, I'm going to tell you because of the grace given to me. Don't think more highly of yourselves because you all belong together. And then he says, by the grace given to you. See how it leads back to grace every single time? This is the gospel in the church, not the gospel for the unsaved out of the church. This is the gospel for us. We need to hear it all the time. It is God's grace for us in this place right here. All right, John, go ahead. There are two things that you'll see circled, all right? Prophecy and service. Now, I don't know about you, but I want the gift of prophecy. That's the gift I want. I want to tell people what could happen. All right? That's not what this means, folk. All right? This in the church, because of the Spirit, because of the nature of the Word being proclaimed, it was considered the office of the prophet was being proclaimed. The office of Jesus, when someone proclaimed the Word, it was the office of Jesus, who is prophet, priest, and king. That prophet part is being proclaimed. Every time I get here, every time Maxine... Put my hand over my microphone here for a second. Every time Maxine opens up the Bible, right? Every time I get together with some of the men, anytime we teach the Word, That is the ministry of prophecy in the church. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't obey this, I know what your future is going to be like. See how easy that is? Everybody can be a prophet. It's pretty easy. But that's really not what it means. What it means is the word being central in the proclamation of the church. That's what that means. And then the other circle, well, you don't have to go back. The other one is service. You got to have those two things. Every church has the ministry of the word and the ministry of service. Those are boiled down, that's the two things every church has. Forget the people who have to fill the roles for a second. Just think of it. Those are the two things. And where it says, in proportion to our faith, don't think just because, I'll just use John again. He has more faith than me that somehow he's going to have more prophetic power. Like somehow he's drummed up more faith. You already know that he's not supposed to think more highly of himself, and that God is the one doing it anyway. So it's not I have more faith than somebody else. Okay? And soon as I think that, what happens? I have to go back to rule one. Don't think more highly of yourself. You know? It's pretty simple. You know, rule one, don't think more highly of yourself, right? Rule two, remember rule one. It's pretty simple. All right? Service. That's the service in our serving. That just really emphasizes these are the two things that really matter in the form of a church. All right? The centrality of the word and our serving, first one another, but then the world around us. Okay, then I want you to take a look. Right after these two categories, we have the one who, the one who, the one who, the one who, the one who. All of a sudden, you got the members. You have these two categories, and I like how he doesn't split the categories, saying under prophecy here, under service here. He doesn't do that. He said, now all the members, you all have something to do. All right? Yeah, go ahead, John. The one who teaches in his teaching. I mean, that's nothing special. If you're going to be a teacher, if you're teaching the word, teach! Let it ring! Now, that doesn't mean, he didn't say go get a college education, a seminary education, and all that stuff. And granted, I know that as a church, we value education. I get that. All right? If we didn't, Nisi and I would have spent our money on something else. Right? I should say I would have spent my mother's money on something else. All right? Okay? All right? But in my teaching, in our teaching, the one who teaches, let it happen. Because they're important. But no less important than the one who exhorts. The one who exhorts, in their exhorting. Can you kind of hear the importance by that second phrase? The second phrase just gives how important it is. And then it says, the one who contributes in generosity. That word for generosity means mega giver. Mega giver. In your generosity, let it flow. Because when you're not thinking more highly of yourself, all of a sudden everything you've got does belong to other. I know you have to take care of family. I know I have to take care of kids. I understand that. But I say in general purpose, the church, those who can give, give. Just give. Don't ask, is it God's will? You have it, give it. Then the one who leads with zeal. Now, this is we're going to be talking about leadership over the next probably 2 years. You know, how do we develop leaders, right? You got to be leaders. We were talking about this at our staff, or internals, CPC and the Hill staff. Leaders show up. They're the first to leave. I mean, they're the first to show up and the last to leave. I said in a Facebook post, politicians drop by. Leaders show up, right? You know? And we're gonna be needing that in our church. We're going to need people just showing up. So, the one who leads, do it zealously. I can even say that word. All right. Then the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. We don't need a mercy fund to expend mercy on other people. As a church, we set aside some money in our budget to help people out. That's what we do. And then we fill out a form and we put it in a box. And then then it goes to a committee. And then the committee votes on it. All right? That's good. It's good business. And it is good because we're allowing the larger CPC church, us and the other church, to kind of say, we want to help people. And that's good. But we don't need that for this line. For those who have mercy, just give it. Did you know the word for cheerfulness there is actually the word for hilarious? Hilarious. Now, if you have been around Maxine, you know when she thinks something's hilarious because she lets it all out. All right? Think of that as how you extend mercy. You're letting it all out so everybody can see the mercy. That's it. I think that's a great illustration. Sorry, I'm picking on everyone today. All right? Keeps everyone awake, by the way. That's a, just in case you ever want to be a preacher, that's how you keep people awake. All right. Go ahead. All right. Go ahead, John. Thank you. So we have by the body, the gathered church working and coming together by grace. All right? Then the next thing is by creating a genuine community. How do you create? We cannot create genuine community. I don't care how hard you try. All right? I don't care how good you are. Someone's going to spoil it. You're going to spoil it. It happens. We need God's supernatural ability to be His people. We ask for it. We plead for it. We want it. So the first thing is, what does this community look like? Who are we? Now watch this, okay? Go ahead, John. Now, this is another one of those. I'm not going to read everything to you, but we're going to take a look at one line at a time. And sometimes all I'm going to say is the word order that it is in the Greek, because I like it sometimes when you can just say the word order, it sticks with you better. All right? And I've done this before. You've heard me do this before. Sometimes just say it the way it's written. And if you speak Spanish, I don't think anybody here does, almost everybody will understand if they speak Spanish. If you just say it the way someone in Spanish, word for word, in English, it actually comes across the way they mean it. See, translation does things. All right? So in this case, I want us to hear this text a little bit. All right, go ahead, John. Here we go. First one. Let love be genuine. Just listen to this. All right? That's the English translation. Perfectly good. Listen. Love be genuine. Love, say it. Love be genuine. Now, doesn't that kind of stick out to you a little bit? All right? We sang that song, God Favored Me. We've reflected on the times that love isn't genuine, so I know everybody here knows when love is not genuine. So our love needs to be genuine. Next one. Abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. You can see the balance there. It's not just one or the other, it's together, right? Abhor evil. That's all it says. Abhor evil. And then hold fast to the good. Abhor evil. Hold fast to the good. All right, John? Love one another with brotherly affection. They didn't have another word for this, by the way. So we have to put up with the brotherly. As if all of a sudden there's no sisterly. All right? But it would have been perfectly okay in those nice little pictures from the women's conference in March. If it would have said brotherly love happening, if you were Greek, you would have gone, yeah, exactly. All right? Okay. We say in our, we'll say sisterly love because it's all sisters. All right? But back then they just didn't have that word. All right? So you have to go, so what I call, go at the word the way it's meant. All right? With family affection toward one another. Sincerely be family. That's really what that means. Sincerely. Because you're going to tell people who are not like each other to act like family. Tax collectors, right? Sinners. Jesus. Right? These people are not like one another. But they were asked to be family. Alright, go ahead. Next one. Before, the red's going to get up there. But I love actually how this is translated. If you remember anything today, just remember this one. Outdo one another in showing honor. I'm going to do better than Nisi at showing honor. But you also know that goes back to rule number one, right? Right? But don't you love that? Outdo one another in showing honor. Especially to those who don't deserve it. Especially to those in our community, neighborhood, or society aren't honored. Right? That's when it's hard to honor. But outdo one another. With regard to honor, one another, outdo. Show the way. Show how it's done. All right? Go ahead, John. Do not be slothful in zeal, but fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. You got to kind of hear this, right? With zeal, don't be slothful, careless, slow. All right? With spirit, be fervent. And that last one's tough. With the Lord, be a slave. I'm telling you, I always feel like it's not my place to use that word, and I understand it. Trust me, I understand it. But that's the word. That's the word in the New Testament. Because servants sound like they're getting paid for it, and the servant sounds like it's more volunteer. I remember one time going, and I was at a Bible study. I was during the summer when I was going to college, and I was trying to explain this, and someone gave me a little lecture about how he's not a slave for Jesus. He's a volunteer. And I said, oh, yeah, really? No, I didn't. I did that in my head. I didn't do that to him. All right? But this is, you got to remember the impact of a slave society. That word would have stood out in regards to the Lord, a slave. That meant the doctor. That meant the wealthy single parent mom, not parent, single mom, entrepreneurial mom who ran a business. That meant the guy that was in charge of X, Y, and Z. You got to remember, all those top level people, they would have said, what are you talking about? No, in the church, that's how you do it. It's not just for the slave to act like a slave. It's now all of you for the Lord. Okay? See that impact? All right. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be consistent in prayer. Basically, it's like a rhyme, right? In hope, rejoice. In trial, be patient. In prayer, be consistently fervent. All right? Now that I did all this, this is the church. I think we have a lot to work on. I could probably preach on one line at a time for the next 5 years, and we still won't get it. But this is who we are, people. And then we finally come to verse 13. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. This is where it sneaks up on us. Because in the early church, where they met people's needs was actually right here. It was actually at that meal, at that supper they would have, where they would celebrate the Lord. They would meet the needs of people. Right? That doesn't mean they didn't meet people's needs outside. But they gathered together. All of a sudden there was... I'm hoping for the day that we have clothes, food, whatever it takes when we have a large group of people that people's needs can be... Why do you think when I buy things... Again, I should have my thing turned off at this point. But when I buy things... Why do I do that? Because I want stuff to go home with people. Because that's the model of Jesus, right? There's so much bread and fish and stuff left over, people got to take it. So we model that. All right? And that's what that is. All right, I want to just take a quick look, and again, I don't want to belabor it, but verse 13 and 14 have to kind of go together, and you'll see why in a second. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute, bless, and do not curse. Go ahead, John. I have to give you my translation here because I want you to hear something that you don't just hear unless you do this, okay? All right? Again, you know I don't pull this card out very often, but I went over this text and I said, you got to hear it. You got to listen to it. It's fun. All right? The needs of the saints contribute. See? Just like love, be genuine. Right? The needs of the saints contribute. Someone has a need, contribute. Big, right? And then hospitality, intentionally pursue it. Bless those who persecute, bless and curse not. Now watch this, go ahead. The word contribute is the word for fellowship in the New Testament. You all know this word, koinonia. You've said it, even if you don't know Greek, almost everybody knows koinonia. Means fellowship, partnership. That's the church. Contribute is actually, that's the word. Have fellowship, meet the needs of the saints. Have sharing among yourselves, meet the needs of the saints. All right? So, go ahead to the next one. And then this one is, I think, really cool and hard at the same time. The word for seek to show and the word for persecute is the exact same Greek word. Translated, nuanced, a little differently. Right? Contribute to the needs of the saint. Seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute. Bless and curse not. that seek to show and persecute are exactly the same. Go ahead, John. That word is used to talk about the persecution of Christians, how Jesus was persecuted, how the church was persecuted. And so that same fervor, that same intentionality against Christians, we need to turn around and have it intentional about hospitality. All right? It's ironic, Maxine, our favorite word, because the church is called to use their households as a place of intentional hospitality. By the way, the New Testament word for hospitality actually means love of stranger. Despite that those are hostile to the persecuting of the church. There's persecution around. There are people that don't want the church around. And Paul is telling them, do hospitality in such a way that you will bless those who persecute you. Because that's the question asked. How do you think the church is to bless those who persecute? How do you bless those who persecute you? Bless those people that don't like us. I can do that from the pulpit pretty easy. It'd be a little harder if I was at Nathan's house. Yes, my house. Right? And we were in our living room, and someone that caused us harm shows up. We bless them. We bless them by being the people of God in the community that brings blessing to the community. We know people are not going to like the message of Jesus Christ because we have sin. They have sin. They know there are people in the world that aren't going to like to know Jesus as Lord because they don't want a Lord over their life. There are different grades of that, for sure. But we are going to bless them by being who we are. Go ahead, Jim. And then, real quick, instructive, because this is how the church does good. This is how we do good. In a little while, Paul's going to say, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. If I were to be able to teach our kids two things, I have to say two things. I would teach them wisdom, right? That would be the number one thing I want our kids to have. What would be the other thing I would want our kids to know? That they are to overcome bad, evil, by being and doing good. That's the hard, it's going to be the hardest thing they ever learn in this world. Because our nature says, if someone's done something against us, I do it back. I prepare to do it back. In fact, I know that mama's going to do something. Now I pick on mama. Not, mama's going to do something to me. Before she does it, I'm going to make sure she can't. That's how we are. So the hardest thing that we can teach our kids is to return good for evil and to do good to overcome evil. That would be such a hard thing. But could you imagine how our world would be, how our neighborhoods would be, how the world, the New Haven would be, if that's what we did? And we do it as a church. Go ahead, John. All right, we've got to move along here. All right, so we have the church gathered together, working together in grace. We have a genuine community. And we have the last thing. Okay, the last thing is by a uniquely creative and different missional presence. What are we doing as a church? How does it seep out of these four walls, these living room, this place, okay? How does it seep out? Go ahead, John. I'm going to take these really fast, okay? We already did verse 14 about blessing those who persecute you. First one, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep for those who weep. I hear, don't judge people. Don't judge people. Those who are rejoicing, grab a hold of them. Rejoice with them. Be glad with them. Those who are having a tough time, weep with them. Weep with them. Go ahead. This one also deserves a lot more time. Every underlined word, harmony, haughty, and own sight, actually is one word, and that is have a mind. And so if you can kind of look at it this way, live in harmony, have a like mind with one another, do not have a bad mind, all right, but associate with the lowly. You know who this is directed at. This is directed at anybody who thinks they're better than somebody else, but you also know it's directed at all those people in those little congregations that were all that, financially, socially, whatever. We can apply that ourselves too, right? So there are people that we think were better, and so we got that. All right? Never be wise in your own mind. All right, go ahead, John. Just let the words be. Repay no one evil for evil. but give thought to what is honorable in all, in the sight of all. I think it's self-explanatory. Don't fight back evil with evil. If possible, I love this verse, right? If possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with everybody. By the way, that isn't for my mom, who has this personality to be very civil. She has a personality all through her life to make sure that the room isn't upset by anything. She wants everything to be civil, right? Man, I got plenty of lectures, all right? I actually am glad I did, but it isn't just for her. It's for John. It's for Rick, whose first response is to not be at peace because something's happening. Rick, did I hear an amen?
Amen.
All right. This is for that personality, too, that doesn't act that way. Oh, that verse is good for Judy, right? It's not good for Rick. So it has to be for Rick. No, it's for the church to live this way. All of us need to learn this one. Then next, go ahead. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I'll repay. Now, why don't you stop here for just for a second. I've said this before. The church is a rebellion against the world. We're a bloodless rebellion. We're a different type of rebellion. We're a rebellion that believes we will die on behalf of those whom are our enemies. We are the ones who know that we could come to harm by doing good. We are not overthrowing Caesar, and I could put down mayor, governor, etc. We're not doing that the way every rebellion does it. We're doing it so wholly differently. All right? Because we know we have to trust God to take care of that we cannot do. And we always have to act like Christ. Then the last one there. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. By doing so, you will heap burning coals on your head. Most people read this as, you know, Nisi's bothering me, so I'm going to feed her and I'm going to give her something to drink and God's going to pour coals on her head. Do you understand that, how wrong that is? I don't do good to Regine, so she's going to have a head burning party. All right? This is a euphemism, and we actually don't know what this means because people have tried so hard over the years and to try to figure this one out. Basically, it's just this simple this. God will take care of it. And by me doing good to somebody and not taking vengeance and showing all these other characteristics, maybe that person's head will finally get it. Now, that's the Chip Anderson version without crossing over into too much of it can't be the other way. It can't be me saying, I'm going to love on Nisi so much that her head's going to be on fire. That is not love. You know, love would mean I let God take care of it, and I'm going to feed her, I'm going to clothe her, I'm going to give her drink, give her shelter. And then God's going to do something for her that she don't know yet. That's how I kind of interpret that, okay? All right, then the last one. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. All right, so we got this. This is a lot. You guys put up with a lot. I think I moved around enough to keep you awake. All right, but isn't this the church? Isn't that some great stuff? That's for us together. That's for us to be in this community. Do you not think if you went through each one of those lines that the Hill does not need any of this stuff? No, the Hill needs people who will abhor evil and cling to what is good. The Hill needs people who will take love and let it be genuine. And just be good. No matter what evil comes your way. This is not hard. This is not easy, folks. See, if I put this all on Freedom, she'd all be by herself. But it's us together doing this, by the way. It's us together. Sorry, Freedom, but you know what I'm saying. If you put it all on me, I like getting bad drivers back. All right? I do it more in my head in real life than in real life, thank goodness. But we all, if it's on us, me as an individual, I could not do this. But if it's all about the church and I'm part of the church, that's who I become, with you. And I practice not thinking more highly of myself and remembering that every member is part of the body just like I am. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much. These good people listened to a rather long sermon this morning. Every time I don't intend that to happen, it does. But I think it's important for all of us to hear this stuff. And we just pray that this morning that we've caught the vision of Paul and that how he saw a church in a world that was persecuting the church. Help us to be this church for our neighbors, for our community, for the glory of God, in whose names we pray.